From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 26th day of May, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. We'll hear another interview with Roman Gorobats. He is the farmer I've talked to before from Ukraine. We'll check in and see how the spring planting season went with him, and we'll talk with him again tomorrow. We'll split that interview into two pieces, so join us tomorrow for the Closing Market Report as well. This afternoon, we'll round out our time by taking up the weather forecast with Mike Tenora, as usual for Thursday, on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, July corn for the day at $7.65, down 7 1/4. December 7, 18 3/4, 4 1/2 lower. July beans were up 45 1/2 cents, settled $17.26 1/2. In November at $15.44 3/4, up 32 cents for the day. Bean meal futures 380 higher. The bean oil up $1.60. July wheat soft red at $11.43 1/4, down a nickel on the afternoon. Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day. Hi, Matt. Thank you so much. Better start with the soybeans. Why did they rally? Do we know?
Well, you know, whenever you look at the crush margins, you look at, for instance, the basis for beans, especially around the export markets, you know, like on the river and so on and so forth, there's no doubt that demand is awfully strong still. You see what the exports were this morning. No question about it. You know, experts, you know, were stronger than what you would think they'd be at this time. 276, you know, for this year, 443 for next year. We've got a huge book on for new crop soybeans. And so I think it's just a variety of things. People are coming to the realization that, you know, these cash beans are going to be extremely tight. You know, and so today, I think a few buy stops got ran, and there's renewed talk about, you know, beans possibly trying to make a run towards all-time highs again. So, you know, it's definitely a stark contrast. I think another thing, another feature in the market, of course, if you look at the way things performed, is that some of the people who were long beans and short corn decided to unwind some of those spreads today. You know, and so it was evidenced by major gains as far as beans were concerned, while corn, you know, actually came off the lows significantly, but ended up with some selling towards the end of the day and ended up with moderate losses. So I think that that spread unwind had a lot to do with both markets as well.
And it seems to me with corn and wheat lower, can beans run very much? Maybe, I suppose.
You know, that's a really good question. I guess my personal opinion is that it's going to be a dynamic situation whenever we're looking at old crop beans. My thought process, you know, with the way crush margins look, with the way this export situation is, I'm not so sure that we're going to run extremely tight on old crop beans whenever it's all said and done. So, you know, USDA is at 235 currently. I don't even know if it's going to be half that, quite frankly. Right now, we've exported more soybeans than what the USDA was suggesting we were going to export, first of all. Now, we got to keep in mind that typically you're 40, 60, 70 million bushels that gets rolled into the new crop. It's a fairly common thing, but at this stage of the game, we're building in such a cushion that that's not even going to really come into play. So, you know, again, last year crushers backed off of this old crop soybean situation because they knew beans were going to be so tight. This market this year has a decidedly different feel. I think it's got a lot to do with the fact that there's less supply out of South America that's readily available and cheap. And so I think a lot of folks are just going to continue to go about their business as they have lately, which is crushing U.S. beans. And obviously, China's continuing to buy some U.S. beans.
Can this be sustained right through the new crop year?
Well, I don't know about that, to be honest. I mean, you close new crop beans at $15.44, heck of a price. You know, I've said all along, anything above $15 to me looks like one heck of a solid price to at least hedge off some risk. We've had a lot of strategies on over the last couple months, actually, where we were, you know, putting a floor in place, whether it was at $14, you know, $15. But a lot of times with some of those, to keep flexibility and to be able to afford to own one, you know, we go out and sell a $19 or $20 call, and I'm not so sure that if you were selling a $20 call on old crop, you might be getting a little bit nervous somewhere in here. But as far as new crop's concerned, I really struggle to think that we would be able to approach those sorts of levels. Now, new crop soybeans are going to be very tight as well. You're looking a little over 300 is what USDA is forecasting, but if you take 100 off the old crop, then all of a sudden you're pushing 200 again. And so again, it's a futures market. We all understand that Brazil's going to plant a whole lot of soybeans this next growing season. That's the job of the market, is to incur additional production whenever we run prices that high. But producers have to pay close attention, because whether we're looking at 22, 23, I think there's a lot of opportunity out here for a producer to lock in some really solid income, and not just for this year.
The prevent plant day for corn under crop insurance for Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, the Dakotas, parts of Minnesota, and part of Wisconsin has now passed as of yesterday. Does that change calculations for anything?
Probably not, Todd. I think typically you might see that that would change some things, but you're looking at December corn still trading 717. You're $1.27 above the spring insurance price, and so I think if someone thinks they can get the corn in the ground soon enough that they can raise a respectable yield, I don't think that they're going to necessarily be entirely scared off by the insurance date. Now, I do think that there's going to be a decent amount of acres go towards prevent plant based upon what we're hearing. But bottom line is it's up to Mother Nature at this point. So she's been fairly cantankerous this year, especially in the upper Midwest. And if that trend continues, I do know producers up there that have been within a day of farming multiple times, gotten a couple of tents here and three tents there. It's been a very frustrating ordeal they've been in. And so we certainly got to hope that they get the opportunity, because we don't want to wish ill will on anyone. But I'm not so sure that, the increase in acres maybe in the I states, Nebraska type area, won't be offset by some losses up in North Dakota and in the northern half of Minnesota.
Will the yield make up for that? Will production be bigger then?
Boy, it's awfully hard to expect it to whenever you're planting this late. Scott Irwin, of course, has done a lot of really good work on that, just trying to show us, what's the correlation between late planting and yield. In 19, they came out and said we were going to have this big yield, and I think it took quite a bit of time to recover from that overestimation on production and then, of course, supply. I don't think that we'll get fooled again this year. Now, the genetics are phenomenal, and one thing that I think is a really important thing to remember is that a lot of this corn that's been planted over the last 3 weeks, the uniform emergence is certainly something that is a really good thing for overall yield whenever it gets right down to it. So I think that the crop's going to be rated really good once we start seeing crop ratings, and that might provide a little more bearishness. But when it's all said and done, a lot of this crop's going to be pollinating in that, July 10th to 20th, 25th area, and that's a scary proposition, Todd. As there's a high chance that we're going to have warm temperatures at that point. So we're a long ways from being able to say we feel comfortable with this crop even yielding what it did last year, let alone anything in excess.
Hey, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. You may recall that not long after the Russian army invaded Ukraine, I called a farmer in the eastern part of that nation and spoke to him about the prospects for getting the crop in. His name is Roman Gorobets, and he farms about 5,800 acres. At the time, he really fully expected to get the whole of the crop in, and he and his brother had laid in all of the supplies, the fuel, the seed, the chemicals, all last fall. Well, I called him again today to see if that all happened and how he's doing there in his part of the world. You might remember that while I was on the phone with him last time, he was under an air raid, an actual air raid, and bombs had fallen in the fields near him. That's not the case this time around.
So this spring we planted corn, soybeans, sunflower, spring barley, and chickpeas. All of the crops are doing well. Emergence is well.
And you got everything in. That's almost amazing. I feel like that's quite something. What were the problems that you ran into, if any?
I wouldn't say there were any problems. Probably the main issue was timing, because we had quite wet and cold April. So we started planting on April 29th. Usually we start planting at the first decade of April, like 8th, 9th, 10th of April, sometimes in the middle of April. But this year we started to plant on, I don't quite remember, 28th or 29th of April. But as long as we have all of our machinery up and running well, we were able to finish everything in a little bit more than 2 weeks.
I remember you have a horsehair cedar, but don't recall what kind of planter you have.
Speaking about air cedar, we have Pöttinger, which is Austrian manufacturer. But we have a horse planter, 16 rows, and we have John Deere 1780, 8 rows planter. So with these two planters, we were able to finish all of our row crops in like 10 days, 12 days.
How many acres of row crops did you plant?
Okay, it's 1,200 hectares.
Times 2.4, about 3,000 acres then. We moved pretty quickly. That's not too bad. 10 days must have been moving nicely. Did you have to worry about anything that was involved with the war as you were in the field?
No, not so far.
That is so good, Roman. Tell me about the neighbors in the area that also farm row crops. How well did they do? And do you think most of the acreage, at least in your region, and I don't know how far you've traveled out of the region, have been sown in Ukraine?
So in my particular region, as far as I know, everybody is all set. And almost everybody did manage to do everything well, and they completed sowing and planting. So most of the fields, I would say all of them are planted. But I heard some big companies, they operate like many thousands hectares or acres. So some of them, they were not able to finish planting because of fuel shortage. For example, there is one company, they operate something about 100,000 acres. It's in Kirovohrad region, which is our neighboring region on the south. So they were able to plant only 60 or 70%, and they ran out of fuel.
And fuel probably appears to be the primary issue. Did anybody have problem getting seed?
You know, as far as I know, only fuel is a major issue, but seeds, chemicals, you know, we established quite good logistical routes. So all of the goods but fuel were able to be delivered to end customer.
Tell me about the ability to move the grain, old crop, that which is already in storage, and new crop, and what your concerns are at this point, if any.
So we sold all of our crops in the last month, during the last month, because of a rise issue of moving crops. Queues or lines are big. At the at one of the port, we have like most southern port of Ukraine, which is Izmail and Dreni. It's on the river Danube. So through that port, we are able to export our grain, and also through European borders by railways or trucks. But lines are very long. So that's why we decided to sell it. You know, we had the ability to sell, and we had some good fleet rate, and we just calculated that, okay, you know, it's not going to be better anytime soon. So we just decided to cash out. And right now we are managing to get some fertilizers and chemicals for the fall planting season, because we are going to plant a quarter of our land with winter wheat. So we decided to get everything in place during next 30, 40, 50 days. And we prepaid for fuel 3 weeks ago, but it haven't been delivered yet. But we are expecting that it's going to be in place during the next 10 days.
The last time we talked, Roman, you had sent your family out of the country because things had heated up in the area. Have they returned?
No, they are still there. So they are in Germany, very close to Hamburg. And actually right now they went to visit Copenhagen in Denmark. and today they're visiting Malmö in Sweden. But, you know, they are over there.
So you're still concerned in this case?
Yes, war is going on. You know, we sort of got used to it, but still, you know, the war is here. I mean, I'm not concerned about some bombings or stuff like that. But, you know, as long as I have a small kid and there can be some issues with supplies, you know, all necessary supplies for small kids, some medicines, for example.
That's Roman Gorobets. He is a farmer in eastern Ukraine. I talked to him earlier in the year and asked if we could check in several times over the growing season. He agreed. Now he's got all his crops in. We'll have more from him tomorrow about some of the logistics and how he markets. It's really interesting stuff, so be sure to listen in to tomorrow's Closing Market Report as well, right here on willag.org. It's a Thursday. We always talk with Mike Tenor about the weather. He's from tstorm.net. That's T-Storm Weather. Thank you so much, Mike, for being with us. Let's start here in the United States today. In the eastern part of the Corn Belt, we've had some rainfall. Temperatures have been relatively cool, though I take it things are about to change.
They certainly are. We have a couple more days of rain to deal with, and then once we get through that, it turns a lot warmer. There's another big system that's developing to the west, and that will develop southerly winds this weekend and early next week. So temperatures are going to soar as we get into the weekend, with high temperatures popping out in the 80s and 90s all across the central United States. So summer is going to time out very well with Memorial Day weekend. Once we get beyond the first few days of next week, it will turn cooler again, but we'll be into June by the time we get into that period. So cool weather in June leads to high temperatures in the 70s, and it won't be like it was a few weeks ago where we had 50s and even some 60s at times. So things are changing. The other thing we need to keep in mind is that rains are going to shut down a bit once we get beyond the next few days. With that big warm-up, we'll see upper-level high pressure temporarily form. That will shut down rainfall across the southeast two-thirds of corn and soybeans going forward across the United States. Now, once we get about a week to 10 days out, and maybe even a little bit beyond then, we'll see a couple of systems move through. But the difference between the pattern that's coming up and the one that we've been in is that it will be a little more challenging for tropical air to flow northward. The reason for that is because surface level high pressure will envelop the state of Florida and the southeastern United States. That's not an ideal setup for tropical air to flow into the Corn Belt. So because of that, we don't think we're going to see a lot of rain over the first 7 to 10 days of June, just some thunderstorms here and there. So pretty much things are going to be looking quiet for a little while, and then we'll have to start thinking about what comes after that. But forecasting weather beyond June 10th is just a little bit too far into the future.
You said the southeastern two-thirds of the Corn Belt. What about that northwestern one-third, the Dakotas, parts of Minnesota and such?
Well, they've been drying out a lot over the last 7 to 10 days, which is certainly needed given how much rains have fallen across the Dakotas and northwest Minnesota. This weekend, we're going to see rains show back up, and that's unfortunate because as soon as you get even a little bit of rain, that will shut down corn, soybean, and spring wheat planting, especially in North Dakota and northwest Minnesota. We'll see some storms tomorrow night and again on Saturday night, and then a larger system moves through Monday and Tuesday, and that's probably when the best overall threat for rain will develop. Between all of that, we're thinking around 1 to 2 inches of rain will fall across that region, and that should be enough to, again, slow things down. And that'll be the next story to see how it unfolds. But basically, the more rain you get over the next 5 days, the less crops you get planted, the less rain you get, the more you get planted.
In Western Europe, France, Germany, across through Ukraine and Russia, what do things look like for you today?
Well, it's still very dry from France through Germany and Poland. This area accounts for a majority of the European Union's wheat production, and about 75 to 95% of the crop in those three countries were drier than normal over the last 90 days. Now, there are some rains coming up in Germany and Poland, so things will improve a bit, but it's going to stay pretty dry in France for at least a week, and that's because areas of high pressure are going to linger. Now, another key area is Russia and Ukraine for winter wheat production, and they've been ideally cool and pretty wet over the last month or two, so things are looking pretty nice there. They're going to also go through a pattern change similar to what's happening in the United States, where it's suddenly going to turn a lot warmer and stay warmer once we get into next week. It's also going to rain much less frequently going forward. So it's going to be hard to really hurt their yield just because it's been so good to this point in the season. But certainly once you start seeing temperatures in the 80s and 90s in Ukraine and Russia later next week, that's not an ideal setup for reproductive and filling wheat.
Mike, thank you so much.
Yep, great being here, Todd.
Thank you. That's Mike Tenori. He's with T-Storm Weather. You can find him online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org. There you'll find our daily programming information from the agricultural economist, crop scientist, and animal scientist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. And, of course, a way to listen to us as a podcast. Just hit the podcast page. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is produced by Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.